Good morning.
How are you doing? I love this from the ex-boss of Saatchi & Saatchi this week. A few days ago, he said, "Marketing is dead. People see through it," he said. "Now is the time to create connections and conversation." I suspect as you hear me say that, you are nodding to yourself thinking, well, that's what I do. Well, in which case, you're in the right place. Because this is the Public Relations Podcast, and we're all about comms in the new era, which means, to a large extent, PR. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by someone who's been on the show before, John Woodruff from Two Tone Consulting. We're going to be diving into some recent stories and campaigns, looking at what techniques we can all get out of them, such as how companies who have negative brand images are using influencers on TikTok. Look at how Adobe's work to get employees to be their advocates. Could have some useful suggestions for any size of organization that you might work in. Plus, have some ideas for using AI tools for your work as well. And John is going to be sharing some of what he's learned on one of his latest campaigns as well. And if that's not quite enough, there are community questions as well. So welcome to another episode of the Public Relations Podcast. But then you already knew that.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Minson.
Welcome then to another week. How are your campaigns going this week? If they are not quite hitting as well as you hoped, I hope you'll find some ideas over the next few minutes. I had an interesting one this week. In fact, I was asked if I would contribute to a children's book on comms and podcasting. There's so many different angles. But it's weird the kind of things that you get sometimes through LinkedIn. But I know the person that is behind the idea, so it could be an interesting project to work on. If you have any ideas of what you think I should put in that, do let me know. I'd be fascinated to know. Also, what about Nathan last week from Miller Inc. Inc. in Los Angeles? Did he happen to see any pictures of that house that his team were tasked to do PR for, to basically raise the value for its sale value? It was owned by Gene Simmons, the lead singer of the rock band Kiss. It's quite impressive. It sold 2 years ago for $16 million, and they're looking for $48 million now. And Nathan's task was to generate interest in that. It's an interesting PR challenge, isn't it? And Nathan shared some of how he did it last week. It was absolutely fascinating to hear about that. But it just shows the power of comms. But that was last week. Let me introduce you to John Woodruff from Two Tone Consulting this week, who, if you've not met him before, he was on the show quite a long time ago. He's an amazing PR agency owner from the Netherlands who specializes in cycling. But what I love is his approach to PR, because it's not about pushing reporters. It's about working with reporters. It's about developing friendships. But John, how are you doing for starters?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am absolutely. It's so nice to have you back on the show again. You are my first repeat person on this new format to the show. So thank you.
What an honor. Yeah, thank you very much.
It's awesome. Well, I just love the way that you do PR. Tell people a little bit about your approach. I mean, obviously tell them who you worked for, your organization, but just tell us a bit about that approach for people that haven't made
it. Yeah, so our company's called Two Tone. We got our start actually also working kind of in the startup world, doing sales in addition to PR, which I think maybe I mentioned before, often has similar if you're, you know, trying to get a meeting or trying to get coverage, like you're ultimately reaching out to people that you don't know. Although in the past number of years, it's almost entirely with bike brands. Some of the more well-known brands we've worked with, I mean, certain big ones like Cannondale and Specialized, smaller brands, one out of the United States, Silka, they make tools like pumps and bags and all kinds of like accessories and things like that. And nowadays, a lot of e-bike brands, another big one that made a feature in the Barbie movie, which was a talk of the town, I would say, globally. Super 73, if you've seen those bikes before.
Was it bright pink?
This was when Ken like took over Barbie World and they made all these like clubhouses, and one of them had a Super 73. you'll notice it if you see it again.
Tell people a bit about your approach though, because I do love yours. You know, we were talking a lot about this last time. You know, a lot of PR agencies still have that kind of get a press release, send it out to 100 people.
Spray and pray, for sure. Yeah, thank you. I think it's about just being helpful. You know, there's a lot of noise, I think, in any industry. But if we have products from our clients, but even sometimes products or things not from our clients, that's kind of the basis of our newsletter. Like, let's share stuff that's useful. Mm-hmm. And if members of the media, journalists, other people in the industry even can see us as a resource, then when we reach out, they're more likely to open our emails or correspond with us because we're genuinely trying to help. I mean, obviously there is like a self-serving aspect. We're trying to get coverage for our customers, mm-hmm. But if we know they're working on something, or if there's something that they should know about or be useful or helpful, I feel like I have a pretty personal
relationship. That's the thing. I don't think you're playing yourself up enough here, actually. I mean, you organize like bands to come along to your offices. You go out on cycle rides with people. You know, you're constantly tweeting about the, you know, you're not just pushing cycling because it's a business. You're doing it. And I love that approach.
Yeah,
no, it's more collaborative, isn't it? I mean, the journalists are your friends. They're not just people you're trying to force to write a story about something.
True. So we try to make an environment or, you know, create something people want to be a part of. So like our 9-year party is coming up on December 1st. And it's often surprising me, like people come from other cities, other countries to come to our party. And on top of that, maybe this is like the top of the stack. We do tattoos at our parties and people get like our logo tattooed.
Oh my gosh.
So maybe it's not extreme that I would get two-tone tattoos, but like interns, customers, like random people at the party. And the next day you'll introduce to people like, do you guys know each other? I'm like, no. You have matching tattoos. Like, you know, they're like, wow.
You know, it's like so having sort of Olympic athletes with the rings on it, isn't it? But they've got two-tone on it.
It's a mark of honor. Yeah,
I mean, so you've done something right, getting people to tattoo the
logo, but it's like inspired. Like we do like bike themed, right. What's called flash. Like you can see some here, like this is some from the past and also back there. So yeah, maybe that's the ultimate. Like if someone believes in your brand so much, they'll come to your party and get a tattoo.
Yeah, you've done something right there. Right, we've got so much stuff to go through. So what we're going to do now is John and I are going to run through a couple of stories, first of all, that we've spotted this week. And I hope that these are going to inspire some ideas in you. So let me start off with the first one, and that is that. Marketing is dead, said the former boss of Saatchi & Saatchi the other day at a conference in Sydney, Australia. There was a nice little summary of Mumbrella the other day, which if you're not familiar with Mumbrella, is the kind of DigiDay campaign PR news of Australia. Mm. They quoted him saying, creativity and curiosity are the defining factors for us moving forward instead of marketing. We have to find new ways to involve and engage our audiences because people are so good at smelling out marketing, knowing what is real and what might not be, and they just don't buy it most of the time. The article went on to say that some firms have dropped the name chief marketing officer to make them chief customer officer. But as Kevin Roberts said, it means nothing if the strategy doesn't change. Is he on the right lines? Can the mindset change? What's your first thought on this one, John?
I mean, I think these like statements are always kind of funny, like the marketing is dead, like print is dead or something. And I would say, you know, to some degree, maybe there's some foundation for it, whether it's the print thing or in this case, the marketing thing. It feels like a little hyperbolic,
though,
because whatever you're doing, like it is marketing. The thing I always talk about is like when people talk about digital marketing, like all marketing is digital. And even if you're getting ambassadors or people in the community to represent your brand, like that is marketing. That's the marketing strategy. I would agree that you have to be more creative. Like when we talk to customers or potential customers and they reference a campaign or something that was successful like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I'm like, yeah, that worked then. That was the first time anybody did it. But you can't just do the same thing and get the same result nowadays.
Does the word actually matter in a way, doesn't it? It's really the techniques. But it's one of my thoughts when I saw this story was that, you know, it's all well and good saying, okay, you've got to be creative, you've got to develop conversations. But the problem is that CMOs more than ever are under pressure to deliver a specific result. So it's much easier for them to use traditional advertising, even if it's not working as well. At least then they've got a quantifiable figure. Whereas if they're just trying to generate a nicey-nicey creative exercise, it's very hard still to get those kinds of numbers.
The kind of the results drivenness, like the ROI is like more intense than ever. I mean, we work in a very competitive space with e-bikes here in the Netherlands, but I'd say in Europe, certainly more than Australia. But people want to do a campaign, a paid campaign, get some influencers, get a coverage, a review, maybe they even end up on like TV or something. And then they expect like bikes to sell, but people, maybe similar to cars or other bigger purchases, like they think about it for a while and they see it somewhere. They see their friend, they see it on social media elsewhere. it takes them many months to pull the trigger. So being so results driven on the short term, like on a quarterly almost perspective, is going to be disappointing because it takes a year for these things to turn around.
Yeah.
And the needles to move. Yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because there was a report out from Muckrack the other day that was talking about the state of sort of measurement. And it was saying that, PR people were spending a huge amount of their time actually monitoring media and outlets and collecting the data. But CMOs certainly saw the priority as being figures now, data, clear mm-hmm. data, and showing mm-hmm. results.
But it's like vanity metrics, like the views and people calculated. And it's kind of a language you have to speak. We just did a media event in Paris, and we thought like 10 people would come. Only 4 people came. I don't know what the circumstances were, but you could still like add up all of the views or subscriptions yeah. of the publications of the people that did attend. And that was enough like vanity metrics for them to be like, oh, this was great. Now, when the stories will come out, we don't know, but you know, you still have to add it up in a big number kind of way to keep people happy.
Yeah. So marketing is not dead. It's just the way it's being done is transitioning, isn't it?
I think so. I think people leverage a lot of social media or even like paid ads and stuff like that. And, yeah. you know, you're having to continue to iterate and rethink things like, maybe one thing that comes to mind is like Super Bowl ads. I think it's still like a thing or something, but that doesn't have the splash or the allure that it used to.
No, there was some research out the other day saying that the awareness, I think, of brands that have been involved in the Super Bowl had gone from something like 70-odd% after it to like 20% afterward.
Yeah, that's a great example. The tried tricks are like overplayed.
Yeah. Time to do something different. Let's talk about another one then. People trust TikTok health influencers more than pharmaceutical or medical companies or doctors, according to a recent article from mmmonline.com. Their assessment was that influencers do better because they're authentic, challenge the one message strategy so often used by campaigns, and use story and emotion across a wide range to resonate with audiences. Companies that have strong negative perception among the people they're trying to reach are reaching out to influencers to help them bridge that gap. There was HCN Healthcare Creator Network was set up that I saw. The whole idea of it was to help companies reach medical influencers like doctors and experts online. I mean, again, this feels like a bit of a no-brainer to me as well, this story. What do you reckon, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's dangerous. I think I read a story, someone that was like a health guru on TikTok, and they like malnourished themselves and like passed away. Did you also read this? I don't know. I don't have a silver bullet for this one either.
I agree with you. My big concern on this one is that, you know, they're trying to reach out to people who are legitimate health influencers, so doctors or scientists and stuff like that. But the people that have the biggest impact on TikTok are going to be the people who have got their own
agenda.
I'm stereotyping here, but have got their own approach to medicine, which may not necessarily be the healthy approach. So there's certainly ethical concerns on this one. I can see the logic of doing it, though, because if, you know, pharmaceutical companies, I think on the whole, immediately have a negative perception around them, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, what this makes me think of is like more like policy change, where like at a young level, like kids learn about what's healthy and like balanced diets or like physical activity or something like that. The analogy being like, there's more conversations about identifying fake news or like sensationalist news. Mm-hmm. And then if you see someone saying something online, and often it's been like, you know, diet fads and stuff like that, that even kind of predated social media, at least as we see it now. And you could kind of tell, like, cool, if I just eat like steaks, whatever, like the, what was that? What was that?
Like, was it keto or something like that?
This kind of stuff, but also, yeah, like, you know, you're supposed to eat like a caveman or something. And it's yes. like,
yes.
And some people buy into it. I'm forgetting the word. But people have to learn, you know, either from school, their parents, their friends, or something, to kind of see through this like influencer medicine. But it's easy to get sucked into it. And I've maybe the second thing I'll say, because I also have like several teenagers, and we probably both do like friends in our social circle, like people will like like stuff and like take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
So I'm also confused, maybe back to the marketing thing a moment again, like you might have an affinity for a brand or like something. We're like, oh, that was a cool commercial, or I like this, you know, sponsored post in my feed. But that doesn't mean you're like totally drinking the Kool-Aid. Maybe I'm being optimistic here, but the influencer medicine thing, it's pretty spooky. Like,
yeah,
it's an easily identifiable. Well,
always like, with influencers symptom. Like this, is I think you're always going to have this danger, aren't you? Where the companies are going to start saying to the influencers, "We want you to say this," which ultimately defeats the whole objectivity and expertise of the person who's saying it.
You saw it a lot during the Corona pandemic, where people were exactly. I think that's like banner example.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. You are listening to the Public Relations Podcast on all good podcast platforms, and also now on YouTube with me, Richard Midson, and my guest host this week, John Woodruff from Two Tone Consulting. Still to come, we're going to be dissecting a campaign from Adobe that involves using their own staff as influencers to see what techniques we like in that. But first, John, we always ask the guest to talk about a campaign that they have been working on to give us an insight into what you've been up to recently and some of the lessons that you've been learning from it, because PR, of course, is always changing. What have you got for us?
Oh, man, yeah, I gave this one some thought, so thank you for giving me a heads up on the questions. The first one that came to mind is a Danish brand we're working with called Omnium. They were even featured in like a Visit Copenhagen campaign recently with their bikes. And Omnia makes cargo bikes that I think built their reputation by bike messengers using their bikes, like in their daily works. So like there's a big cargo bay on the front of the bike and you can just stack stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get a dealer here in Amsterdam. They wanted to do like a campaign focusing on dealers internationally. So if you went and did a test ride of one of their bikes at a bike shop and you posted about it, consumers could win an Omnium. Actually, and they even make like really fancy titanium ones. So I think ultimately that was a success. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like several thousand people around the world did the Try Omnium campaign, posted about it. The bike shops were posting it. And it was like a really cool grassroots.
What do you think made it really pick up there? What do you think?
I think the bikes, good question. I think the bikes at a base level for the people that really love them, it's like quite cult. Like it's a recognizable design. They aren't the first brand to use this design and won't be the last. There's been brands since that kind of mimic this frame design of the cargo bike. But having an Omnium, riding an Omnium, like it's a distinct choice. There's other kinds of cargo bikes that are more prevalent or more, you know, more like people here in the Netherlands ride with their kids in them or something. And this is it's not certainly not a status symbol, but it's like a statement.
Yes.
If you ride
it's who I am if I'm riding that.
It's like aspirational. Mm-hmm. So it's just like if there was like a design, your pair of Nikes campaign, people were like, oh, I want to wear Nikes. So it's like cool shoes to wear. Like Omnium's a cool bike to wear.
So did you focus on that particular aspect? Or what was the main sort of message that you were getting across with the campaign?
Good question as well. So we reach out to a lot of media here in the Netherlands. The Netherlands is certainly known for bikes, and there's like the typical like
cycling
city bike.
Capital of the world. Yeah,
it's insane. So it's so understood, and people really don't love bikes here. And I don't think bikes make that statement. Like someone could roll up to a nice business meeting or even a formal occasion riding a shitty bike, and no one would judge them, as opposed to like rolling up in a fancy car. Or not to like the valet in other countries. They'd be like, whoa, did you see he's driving a Toyota? You know what I mean? Or whatever. I lost my train of thought on that one.
I was just saying, what was the sort of core message that you were really pushing?
The core message, exactly. Yeah. Thank you for getting me back on track. Because people didn't really understand the bike or the design, the core message was like, can we just come by and show you the bike? Because we really weren't getting the time of day from people because they didn't know it or it didn't seem interesting to them because they weren't familiar with it. So we followed up in like a gentle way, getting replies from people that we knew. And there was like some auto replies that we got. But ultimately where we've had success is if we can just bring the bike by, have them see it and visualize like what they could do with it or what their readers or viewers in one case could do with the bike. And then the real silver bullet, a colleague of mine rode two Omniums there. We convinced them to leave one there for them to test, actually. So we're actually talking face to face. Okay, we're going to leave the bike here. You guys can try it. And then because it has that cargo bay on the front, my colleague Charlie she sat on the front of my bike and we rode off with another person on the front of the bike. And they were like, well, this is so like,
yeah, it's fun. So
So we have a saying in the office, like, don't tell me, show me. So yes. I think we could have sent a million emails, but getting them to agree to us to come by their office, and it's like a 30-minute ride over there, talk to them about it, show them, sit on the bike, ride it. They're like, hey, this is kind of cool. Oh, you know what? Actually, we could. And we're like, cool, we'll leave it here. And then two people ride off on the same bike, and they're like, this is awesome. And then suddenly they got it.
How is it you – I mean, I asked you this one before because it's like – bicycles, there's only so much you can do with them. It's not, you know, you talked about a Toyota, you could put a wing on them, you could put, you know, go faster stripes down the side, you could put different alloy tires, whatever. There's only so much you can do with a bicycle. So how do you make it stand out?
I think it's comparable, but maybe even, you know, continuing to build on that Saatchi X-Boss intro that we talked about, like marketing the bike in like ads in magazines or paid ads in social media or even reviews in a classical marketing kind of way as like a limited return. I think it's people getting the bikes or like local bike shops being convinced or your friend being convinced. And it's certainly in the case of Omnium, it having this like cult, like reputation, that's what draws people in. But otherwise, I mean, I think that's really like the core of it now, especially it's so competitive with e-bikes in this market or in the European market, I would say, is like getting into communities and getting people to trust the brand and use the brand. Maybe that is influencers, maybe that's reviews, but that's what makes the bike stand out. And then kind of actually to your point, you can pimp your ride and you can do different wheels, you can do different handlebars and stuff. So a lot of those analogies still hold true. Like you could totally... and more recently, a lot of bikes like Funmove, I don't know if you read about this, like Funmove went bankrupt. This was probably one of the most famous e-bike brands originally from the Netherlands, but it spread like to Asia and North America and all over Europe. But their bikes famously had proprietary parts that you couldn't repair or replace.
Right.
So now a lot of bike brands, they're like, hey, we have regular brakes, regular gears that your bike shop or yourself can service or replace. So that's actually pretty important deal that like, and you see that in other industries too, also with like iPhones.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I immediately thought of that as well. Yeah.
You should be able to repair it just like your dishwasher or whatever. And for a long time, that wasn't the case, but now there's like a right to repair legislation happening in a lot of different countries.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is the main thing that you, I think PR is always changing, isn't it? Marketing is always changing. Was there anything that you picked up from this campaign, which was something that kind of caught you out or made you think, oh, okay, that's new. People are reacting differently. Is that a trend that changed or anything like that?
Yeah, I think that's why I wanted to drive that point home before I lost my train of thought earlier is like, I think we sometimes can get used to or accustomed to like sending a campaign. We don't do like big send outs, and it might be like 20 something people. We'll even reference like the recent article they wrote or, you know, why we think this might be interesting for them. But getting back to like actually going and visiting and even like demoing the product or showing it to them. And like we often, you mentioned this earlier, like here at the office, we have the concerts and music. We have really nice lunches on Wednesdays. We shop at a market nearby and we had someone from the ANWB, which is kind of like the roadside service here that also services bikes, of course, it's the Netherlands. Like the face-to-face contact, this is like so cheesy.
But it works.
The Omnium campaign, like we wouldn't be getting reviews for these cargo bikes if we didn't actually go show people, because a press release like isn't going to cut it. They'll look at it. It looks like a weird bike. It's too big. Like we don't have room for this. But if you show them and go talk to them, ride with them, they're like, oh, this is awesome. And they're like, yeah. But you can't convey that with an email almost.
Yeah. You simply can't. No, it's that emotional, isn't it?
Awesome. Yeah. So
Yeah, so a question for everyone watching at the moment and listening in. Who are one of the most untapped influencer resources every single organization has available to it? Well, in 2013, Adobe launched a program called Social Shift, a strategy aimed at transforming employees into brand ambassadors by educating them on company-specific social media guidelines.
But this wasn't just about telling them what brand message to say at certain times or telling them to reshare company announcements. It was about encouraging them to be themselves, influencers, while advocating for the brand. The initiative worked. It's thought that 30% of employees globally in Adobe have embraced the training, sharing hundreds of thousands of posts with vast amounts of content and significantly amplifying website traffic for the firm, they say. But of course, every strategy faces its challenges too. In 2022, an anonymous blog post authored by employees labeled Social Shift as Corporate Propaganda, accusing the firm of misusing employees' personal time and personal platforms for unpaid advertising. The company swiftly responded, emphasizing that it is voluntary to take part and they wanted to foster genuine and authentic brand conversations only. But as it gets harder and harder for traditional marketing to work, more organizations are turning to employees to provide an authentic voice for their brand that reaches out to many different target segments. So is this a strategy that you could be using? I mean, when I looked at this, I think it's quite interesting to see how many companies are doing this now. This, you know, Adobe might have been one of those first people that really kind of formalized it into a process, but everyone is saying, please reach out now. And I think actually on LinkedIn now, you can actually see whether your employees are engaging with your product and how much they're posting on it as well. You can monitor it all. So the systems are in place to actually do this now, aren't they?
Definitely. And I think there's probably people with like job titles that specifically are monitoring it, we use a tool called Mention. It was acquired by another brand. It was originally from France. So you're probably familiar with it. And you can monitor the tone, if it's like positive, neutral, or negative. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be some filter where it's like employees are sharing about your brand and it would like immediately pop out if like an employee is posting negatively about your brand. It's mm-hmm. like, or about their employer, I would say. Yeah.
I mean, that's a problem, isn't it? I think a lot of companies are very, they've decided what they want their message to be, and they find it very hard. I mean, even frankly, to give to a PR agency and say, look, can you go and create a campaign for us? They get very protective about the specific message they want to get across at times. So actually mm-hmm. giving employees the freedom to be authentic, I think is a challenge for a lot of firms. Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought about with this is like Adobe often has bad PR because I'm not a designer, but I know anybody that works with like the Adobe products, like the licensing and all like the bullshit, and like they're tied to it because like everybody uses InDesign or Photoshop or whatever. And like, it's almost like a necessary evil, but then it's, you know, people just like, they have to use it. It's like the benchmark tool, but then they're like, they love to hate it. So I think on one hand, it's kind of brilliant if Adobe employees were like being positive about it. But at the same time, I could see how it comes across like disingenuous, or it might feel forced. I think from my own view, for like Two Tone and our colleagues or the employees of the brands that we work with, I would put it this way. If Adobe employees were sharing about like their creative projects or the things they do, and maybe occasionally that involves an Adobe product, but it's like if they were like painting or something, it would behoove Adobe or any brand to have people that have an influence online working for their brands. I have an example of a recent hire one of our customers made that we're considering about announcing because he's kind of like a notable guy, but his social media persona was like veiled. Like no one knew who he was actually. And through the years, everyone kind of realized who this guy was, and he worked at one bike brand and is working another. But it's so cool for that brand to have like this notable guy working there. But my ultimate point is like a Two Tone, it's awesome if people ride either in the city or road rides or gravel rides or whatever. But my point is, I think it's cooler that they ride or the Adobe employees are artistic, but you don't have to wear our clients' clothes. You don't have to use our clients' tools. It's more important that you're actually writing, or in Adobe's case, that you're actually creating something or doing something artful. It doesn't have to be Photoshop or InDesign or something like that, because then it feels forced.
It feels too forced. That's a really interesting point, though. So what would you think is the kind of, if you're trying to train employees as to what the limits are, what the scope is, you know, it's like, how far do you allow them to go? I agree with you. I think the idea of just being if you're talking about the creative space, you're talking about art, you're talking about these things, but you're just kind of mentioning the fact that you're working for Adobe and you're bringing in those tools when they're useful, but they're genuinely useful, I think that's probably okay.
What it makes me think of is a company I worked at that merged with another company, and that's what brought me to the Netherlands. And this company back in the day was called High Groove Studios, and we did back-end web development, which is very easy not to see because it's like databases. But we had a thing called, I think it was like Tech Talks on Fridays, and we would, the people in the team would show how they did something. It could be work-related or not. It could be like a software tool or developer tool or something like that. And it demonstrated our expertise. And we also had a thing called like our not-so-secret sauce. And it was kind of a part of the company culture where we just showed how we did things. So back to the Adobe example, like a two-tone example. If we have a ride, like an office ride or a company ride, and everybody joins the ride, or there's something that's like built into the company team, there's an incentive for people to participate, then that demonstrates like the authenticity or the thought leadership even of the people that work at the company. But they don't have to, it doesn't have to be like a marketing thing or showcasing like our skills. For High Groove, that worked really well because these things would get viewed, and it's just like a useful tool or approach that showed the people that worked at the company knew what they were doing or enjoyed what they were doing. So for us, it could be bikes. For Adobe, it could be, you know, InDesign or, you know, creative graphic design or something like that. But you just have to have an incentive for.
Well, it was interesting because when I was reading this stuff about Adobe's approach, is that the way they do the training and they pitch it to employees is that we will train you how to be an influencer rather than, I mean, I don't know the exact details of their internal training, obviously. But that's apparently the way that they do it because, I mean, what was it? I think I've mentioned this before. There was some survey the other day that said 50% of Americans under 40 want to be an influencer or something. So it's, you know, it's quite an easy kind of selling point to get people on board with it.
And a lot of social media I've read is it used to be 10 years ago that everybody was like contributing, like everybody was posting.
Yeah.
And now, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but it's become much more passive that people really consume it, but fewer people are like posting and participating. So I do, you know, I think we're meant to be kind of critical of these examples. I do think it's a cool contribution. And my second job here in the Netherlands was for like an HR tool that like facilitated like aggregating different kinds of trainings that you could book, or even with like employee development and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that usually would be like, I don't know, like leadership training or, you know, even software developer training or anything like that. But I think it's a really funny idea or a cool idea. It's like, man, empower your employees to do better on social media. I feel like we do that too, because everybody in the Two-Tone team is meant to post about their own customers on our account. But I think that is like a modern thing. Like, it's a skill that everybody wants to have. And it's like, here's how you make Instagram reels. Like, your company will teach you.
Yeah, so it works, doesn't it? And so, I mean, my only final point on this is that it does concern me if you're making it too much part of the company culture that you're putting pressure on people and then people start putting out stuff which is just bad quality because they feel like I had to do it because, I mean, you know, I talk about that example of the people saying that they felt pressured to. And then they start putting out stuff which starts to discredit the brand because it actually looks tacky. I mean, maybe actually in a way it doesn't matter because no one's going to follow that. Maybe there's a kind of self-regulating aspect to that.
Yeah, it's a catch-22 because often my opinion with social media, especially the stuff we post, is like, I don't really care how many likes it gets. I want our social media feed to just be like a Rolodex of the stuff that we're doing. Yeah. And stuff that we feel good showcasing, or that we, you know, are customers are glad that we're sharing. And I often feel like if someone's like freaked out about some social media posts, it's like, man, this is like a fucking Instagram post that is gone that afternoon.
Yes.
In the feed. Somebody could go back and find it. You can also edit it, you know, or you can remove it if you really feel like you need to. But if, even though there's been huge blowouts for social media stuff, so there has to be pretty egregious for that to happen. But for the most part, like, let's not assign too much like focus on this. There's like bigger fish to fry. You know what I mean? So if an employee posted something that's like subpar or even like, I don't know, like critical or in bad taste or something like that, like it's probably just going to like float away or fly away into the sunset. You know what I mean?
You know, there's like, one other thought that just struck me actually, is that if you train someone and they build up quite a following and then you decide that you don't want to employ them anymore, you've actually created a bit of a problem for yourself, haven't you? Because if they've developed a personal brand.
I don't think so. I think
no.
My philosophy on that, especially the people that have worked at Two Tone that have went to work on, in three cases I have where they went to work for a customer, which you would think, oh, there should be like a non-compete, but like it's cool for me for Two Tone to be like this stepping stone for them.
I just meant more if they start saying bad things about you. You know, if you ended up firing someone, for example.
I think that's a reflection of like management style, company culture.
Yeah.
And that's not because you trained them, you know, to have a bigger megaphone. But, you know, back to that Highgroove company that we had, the tech talks where we would showcase, you know, on YouTube, then like our skills, people that would leave Highgroove would go work for Twitter, Facebook, Amazon, doing cool web development stuff. And it was almost like a badge of honor. You still see this now for people that work at Nike for a number of years. That's like a bing, like or Patagonia or something like that on their CV and their LinkedIn that they worked at that brand. But maybe they go on to do something else or do their own company. But if your brand is that stepping stone and you're the people working, having had worked at your company is so valuable that they want to be proud of that, I think that's cool. And if they learn social media skills at your company, that's
If you're getting that back far, then you've got to ask, you've actually got to look at yourself, not them, haven't you?
True. Yep.
Yeah. Fascinating discussion. I mean, I think the general conclusion there is that there's definitely a usefulness in this kind of technique, but they've got to be given a sort of scope as to what is okay to say, but then encouraged to be creative in their own ways beyond that, haven't they?
Yeah, and I don't think it should be compulsory.
Yeah,
because I think back to this like other trend, like more and more people are sharing less on social media. Because the stakes are too high. Like if I post this video and I get 10 likes and you feel like a failure and you just rather just like check it out and not participate. So I think that's also a trend.
Yeah. Well, I would love to know if you're watching this at the moment or listening to it as well, what you have done in this particular situation. Have you tried having employee advocacy campaigns? Have you had any problems with it? You're always welcome to reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can reach me at Richard Midson, MIDSON. I would love to hear your thoughts on that. And I will not mention the name of your organization or anything like that. If you'd like to give me some thoughts and we will get the thoughts in the show, but without attributing you, because I'd love to know what you are experiencing and what's going on. You are, of course, listening to the Public Relations Podcast with me, Richard Midson, and the wonderful John Woodruff from Two Tone Consulting in Amsterdam, who's got his hands up right now if you're watching on YouTube. If not, have a try with the YouTube channel. You will find it simply by searching for the Public Relations Podcast. In a moment, the community bag, which is where we basically answer questions you've emailed or sent in via LinkedIn that we discuss and give our ideas on what we think you could do. I will change your name and leave out your organization, by the way, again. So if you're concerned about that, just let me know what your questions are and I will include that, as you'll find out in a moment. I've also got an AI story for you still to come. Let me mention there's also the newsletter that goes out with the show that contains my main takeaways from each episode. It is free. You can get it at thepublicrelationspodcast.com. And if you're looking for always on the hunt for giant killing ideas, then it's not long to go now until I finally get around to releasing the Public Relations Podcast project, which the idea of that is going to be to have a whole bunch of the latest techniques and ideas that I've been spotting around the world, and it's going to be on PRology.com. There's a waiting list on that at the moment, but hopefully that will finally be underway in the next couple of weeks. Right, ChatGPT has gained the ability to study images now. Anyone can use it, but can it help you improve your imaging, design, colors, etc. for your next infographic? Well, I entered the logo for this show, for the Public Relations Podcast, and I then told it who my audience are, and here's a bit of insight for you. It's about 65 to 70% female, with the largest audience in the USA, Europe, Australia, and then spread around the world, and the age is 18 to 45, with the median age around the mid-30s. So I shared that demographic. And I said, well, what would you do with the logo? And it said, the first thing, this is to quote it literally, it said, consider featuring an image of a confident-looking woman as the leader, which could be a struggle for me presenting this show. But, I mean, it's a great idea. But I thought there was a bit of a challenge on that one. Sorry?
You could have a new co-host.
Well, exactly. Maybe there we go. John's got the answer for this one. I thought more interesting was it was saying things like use pastel colors, although rose gold or even a brighter shade of blue, etc., appeal to a younger demographic than the logo currently does. And one more I'll share with you. It said, consider tweaking the tagline to something like elevate your PR game or leading the PR revolution. My gut feel on it, and this is the whole limit of AI, isn't it, John? Is that these are just a bit tacky. It's kind of what it's come up with by looking at what others have done, and it just doesn't feel like it adds much to me. What do you reckon?
Yeah, keep coming back to the Saatchi intro. It's like, don't do what other people are doing. My colleague Kike and I have a radio show, which everyone says is a podcast. Maybe it is a podcast, but we broadcast it live, but you can listen to it later. And it's called The Mechanics of Joy. And it's like, we're not mechanics. Is it like how joy works or how you actually make it happen? Like, we don't have like a slogan. We like to get cool guests on there. And I understand where AI is coming from, because it's like, oh, you want this aspirational tagline. Like, yeah. Well, if I listen to that, I'm going to elevate my game. Like, that makes logical sense. But no, I think it should be more mysterious and a little like off kilter. I think that's,
I mean, I can see what it's doing as well. It's basically going, okay, you're looking at that particular demographic. What does everyone else do that tries to reach that demographic? And it's basically just giving you the most common answer, isn't it? That's the problem. And I think
the paradigm is that the brands or shows or whatever that often become like the most iconic, they're the ones that did something different.
Yes. Yes. So
everyone tries, it's like a classic catch 22.
Yeah.
It's like they weren't reading someone else's playbook.
Yeah.
You know,
There was one other interesting thing I did actually try, which was I put in a picture of my cat and I said to GPT, how old is this cat? And it said, it's 10 years old. Well, my cat is 13 years old. And that was a bit spooky.
Interesting.
It simply guessed it from his sort of eye texture and stuff like that and his shape. Like, I mean, unless that was just a guess. You know, and I'm reading into that now.
Yeah, you have to do a bigger, bigger study, more cat photos.
Yeah, exactly. Probably got loads in there. Right, just one more section to go today. This is the aptly named community bag, where we go through the questions that you've emailed to me, either via email or that you sent to me on LinkedIn, and then we discuss them to see if we can help with our experience. So what have we got in here? The first one, this is one that I'm changing all the details on this one to avoid being able to identify the person who asked this, but this is the gist of the question. Their client has been accused by a rival of saying something at an event that they didn't say. People are talking about it. What's the first step to look at to turn this around? My immediate thought when I got this question, I explained this in more detail actually on the conversation I had with this person, is that there's a lot more that you could say. But to keep it simple, the first question is, was there any evidence to prove that they didn't say it? I think people immediately, when they get in situations like this, start to panic. And it's like, well, was it being filmed? If it was an event, was anyone filming it with a mobile phone? Are there enough people there that are happy to say on the record that this was never said? Those sorts of things. What's your first reaction, Joe?
Oh, man, my first reaction is kind of back to like the topic of this like employee social media thing, or maybe social media in general, or more community driven as opposed to typical marketing, or in this case, like crisis communication or whatever drama kind of thing is. Man, spokesperson from accused brand, spokesperson from rival brand, maybe it's like the two CEOs, the two brands, do like a co-post. You know, you can have two people host one social media post and have them like sort out the beef in like a tongue-in-cheek way. Like, hey man, I heard you said this. It's like, no, what I said was and what I meant. And like, oh yeah. And then it's humor and like both brands are tagged and it shows them both of their feeds. And it goes off. You see these memes.
So almost like the Zuckerberg, Elon Musk cage fight.
Something like that. I think that a little bit different, but that became like its own zeitgeist kind of thing. But you'll see, I can't even remember the example, but it's like someone from one fast food chain posting something and then the other fast food chain like comments on the post. You've seen this.
Yeah.
So like corporations acting like they're like funny teenagers.
Yeah, it's like Wendy's did a huge amount of that a few years ago. Yeah.
Exactly. So this, in one hand, is more serious, like, you know, get the two CEOs sit down, not a cage match, but just like, hey, man, how's it going? Maybe they're at the bar. Maybe they're like doing something, you know, riding bikes. And it's like, yeah, I heard. Exactly. Yeah,
there we go. That's John's solution, isn't it? It's whatever the problem, get him on a couple of bikes.
Hey, and I'll mention this also for current events, which is a little more somber than what we were discussing before, but with like what's happening in Israel and Gaza. Mm-hmm. Back in 2015 at the Berlin Bike Show, we had imams and rabbis riding tandems together. So
lovely.
Yeah. Cycling unites. So get them both on bikes, do a co-posted Instagram post.
I think there's a perfect one. Right. Next question. Everyone is posting workout videos and tips these days if they are a personal trainer. So how can you stand out? Do you want to start with this one, John?
Also, ready to go answer on this one. A friend of mine, he used to have a bike brand. He's got an app called BMAV. I think it's bmav.co. I think it's technically based in LA, and they have like studios. I think during the corona, it took off. People would do like more like online training and stuff like that. But they're producing these kind of workout videos. So using a tool like that was my first idea. But the second idea, kind of going back to our philosophy on like being helpful for media or even helpful for other agencies in other countries, like what for work to them, what for to us, when it comes to trainers. And I think this is BMAV's thing, is having a community where if someone does like running training, the other guy does like bike fits, and the person does like, you know, weightlifting or swimming or whatever, like having a community or a resource where you might share tips with that swimming trainer, that you might share tips with the weight trainer or whatever, being a part of that. So BMAV is the first one that came to mind. And then again, I've seen this in a number of industries, whether it's bikes or otherwise. The swimming trainer might give a shout out, for especially like cross training or multidisciplinary training. Excellent. Like when I'm ready to do my weight workout, I take my tips from so-and-so. Or when I'm going to go for a run, this influencer shares their running tips from that influencer. So like cross promotion, like sharing each other's audiences, as opposed to feeling like, oh, I need to like stick out above all these other online trainers, flipping the script and like giving other trainers a shout out, what you admire about their trainings or their posts. And the likelihood is that they'll like repost your story and their followers will then see you and then following you. Like, you know,
I love this approach. You're really good at building community. I mean, it's like my answer, I was going to come straight in there and say, well, you know, what is it you can do to differentiate yourself? Because so many of these fitness trainers just put a fitness video on there and don't do anything about it. And it's like, well, you've got to start developing a community. You've got to have like those live sessions. You've got to be talking to groups and stuff like that. But I actually love your approach. It's far more collaborative.
It's like a rising tide lifts all boats, and, you know, it like flatters. It's like this like philosophy of like, you know, reaching out to like CEOs of companies that you admire, or like just people that you admire in general, and like the likelihood that they probably will reply. Like that's a classic adage or something. So like if you tag as an up and coming personal trainer that's trying to build your reputation online, the people that you admire, the likelihood that they'll either give you advice or repost or reshare what you're doing. Because they already have it made in the shade. If you get more followers, it's not going to mean they lose followers. Like, it's not a zero-sum game. So you just benefit from that, I think.
Wise words of wisdom from John, of course. If you'd like to put something in the community bag for next time, you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn. As I say, it's Richard Midson, MIDSON. You can find me there, and you're welcome to reach out at any time. Well, that's basically it. Let me thank John Woodruff from Two Tone Consulting. Thank you so much once again, John. What are you up to next? What big campaigns are you working on next that are catching your eye?
Well, we just were in Dresden for the Handmade Bike Show. It's the first time happening in Europe, and in the past it's always been in England. So we're going to issue a statement, press release, that it's going to be in the same place, same venue. It was in the Dresden airport, which is kind of a weird place to have a bike show, but it was a cool dichotomy. Yeah. That'll be coming up next year. We've got our 9-year party coming up December 1st. The fall is a little bit quieter for bike related stuff. There's a lot of planning.
I guess the weather starts to put people off eventually, doesn't it?
to some degree, but here everyone's still going to ride to work and yeah. ride around for their commutes. But it's a lot of planning for next year and like planning rides and things for clients, stuff like that. But not a, yeah, maybe the last note is actually doing like a gift guide and like some Christmas planning for, you know, ending up some gift guides, which we always feel like we do too late, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's something I saw on YouTube and that there's some kind of cycle race that happens in Holland, which is along the top of one of the sea dikes, but you mm-hmm. ride into the wind when there's a storm or something.
And you ride on like a normal your action. Yes. city bike. Yeah. It's, yeah. this is a very cult event. Yeah. It's the, Tegenwind is like the headwind. So it's like the headwind national championship. It's insane. Like if you were to stand sideways and hold your bike, even if you had like a heavy city bike, your bike yeah. is like flying in the wind. You have to like hold on to it, you know?
I saw it on YouTube and I was just like, oh my gosh, that's hard. I mean, it's hard enough cycling up a hill, but my gosh.
They call them Dutch mountains. The headwind is Dutch mountains.
John, it's, as always, an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate your insights yeah. as well and for sharing them so willingly. Thank you so much. So, John, there's just three more things then that I'd like to round up before we round up this show. If you're running a campaign, let me know what you're up to and a little bit about it so that I can give you a plug in the show. You can reach out to me, as I said before, on LinkedIn. It is Richard Midson, MIDSON. If you'd like to be a guest host on the show, then I want you on. Just reach out to me via thepublicrelationspodcast.com. You will find that there is a link at the top of that which says guest. Click on that. It's got all the details about what's involved in taking part in the show, how we organize all the stories, how we discuss it, and all this kind of thing. There's lots of details in there. I'm getting a lot of people reaching out to me at the moment who are giving sort of generic pitches, and that's great. It's wonderful. But then I keep having to go back to them and say, have you read the details about the format? Do you understand what we're actually doing? And then they read it and then they come back and go, yeah, I'd love to appear. But it just saves a bit of time on that one. So you're very welcome to come on, but please do have a quick check of that page. That's about it for this week. I hope you are having an absolutely fantastic week. I hope your campaigns are going really well. We are heading up to the busy time of the year with Christmas as well. If you're not doing so much cycling as John was doing there, then everyone's getting ready for the Christmas presents. So I hope you're having a very successful time with that. And I will speak to you next week. I've got a whole load more guests from around the world. I'm trying to think actually some of the other places we've got. I've got India coming up. Got someone from New York. Loads more. I hope you have a great week. I'll speak to you real soon. Bye.